Let's go ahead and begin reading here in Romans chapter 9, beginning with verse 30. Romans chapter 9, beginning with verse 30. What shall we say then? That Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness attained righteousness, even the righteousness which is by faith. But Israel, pursuing a law of righteousness, did not arrive at that law. Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as though it were by works. They stumbled over the stumbling stone, just as it is written, "Behold, I lay in Zion a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, and he who believes in him will not be disappointed." Brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them is for their salvation. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. For Moses writes that the man who practices the righteousness which is based on law shall live by that righteousness. But the righteousness based on faith speaks as follows. Do not say in your heart, who will ascend into heaven, that is to bring Christ down, or who will descend into the abyss, that is to bring Christ up from the dead. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith which we are preaching. That if you confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart a person believes, resulting in righteousness, and with the mouth he confesses, resulting in salvation. For the scripture says, whoever believes in him will not be disappointed. For there is no distinction between Jew and Greek, for the same Lord is Lord of all, abounding in riches for all who call on him. For whoever will call on the name of the Lord will be saved. All right, now there is an awful lot there in those verses. And Paul is basing a lot of what he says in those verses on Old Testament passages. And it's pretty obvious he's assuming that his readers are pretty familiar with these passages, some of which he just alludes to, or some of which he'll just cite the passage, not even give some introductory phrase. He'll just kind of quote words from these Old Testament texts. And so I think a lot of the times the reason why these verses are a little more difficult for folks is because of that. You have to kind of see what Paul is doing with all this. But let's see if we can't just unpack what Paul is saying here. He's starting out in verse 30 of chapter 9 by pointing out the tragic irony here. There is a great irony that Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness attained righteousness by faith. What's he mean by that? Gentiles did not pursue righteousness, but yet they attained righteousness. What's he mean?
Well, they didn't live according to seeking God and his holiness, but they lived according to the pagan type of worship.
Okay.
And yet, because of their faith in Jesus Christ, they received the righteousness that was there.
Okay. He's talking about Gentiles historically. The nations of the world were not nations that sought the Creator, even as Paul had talked about back in chapter 1, the nations of the world, the Gentiles. And keep in mind, that's what the word Gentile means, nations. Okay. So the nations of the world had rejected the Creator, they had served pagan deities, they had lost the knowledge of the Creator. And so historically, Gentiles, unlike Israel, we're not seeking God and we're not seeking God's kingdom. And yet the irony is that now that the kingdom has come, the majority of believers in Jesus are Gentiles. And so Gentiles, people from that group who historically did not pursue righteousness, Yet they attained righteousness because they were willing to put their faith in Jesus, the Son of God, when he came and when that gospel had been proclaimed to them. So that's one side of the irony here. Now, what makes it a tragic irony is the other side, Israel. Historically, Paul says, Israel pursued a law of righteousness. And yet they did not attain righteousness. And Paul says the reason why they did not attain righteousness is because the people of Israel, overall, they viewed it as attainable by their works rather than by putting their faith in God and His Messiah and allowing God to do things in His way. This really is just a tragic and ironic thing. I mean, here is the Jewish nation throughout these centuries, and they are looking for the coming of God's kingdom. They're looking for the blessings of the Abrahamic promise to be fulfilled. In that sense, Paul is saying they were pursuing a law of righteousness because the Mosaic law and the prophets, they were talking about this righteousness that would come in the last days and God would bestow all of these blessings in his kingdom. And yet, despite the fact that they pursued that righteousness, they did not attain it. And I really want us to appreciate verse 32 because this is the reason that Paul gives. Chapter 9, verse 32. Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as though it were by works. They stumbled over the stumbling stone, just as it is written, "Behold, I lay in Zion a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense." That last part there is a quotation from Isaiah 28, where Isaiah had talked about God's plan that his people were going to stumble over, like a stumbling stone, a rock in the way that you stumble over. And yet God was actually using this stone that they stumbled over as the foundation stone, as the cornerstone for his great temple. Ultimately, it's a passage that the New Testament, of course, applies to Jesus. Jesus is that cornerstone, but yet for those who refused to believe in him, he became a stone that they tripped over, that they stumbled over. And so this is Paul's point, that they viewed the way whereby they were going to be reckoned as righteous as ultimately more dependent upon themselves than upon God. And they certainly weren't expecting that they needed some Messiah to come and die as a sacrifice for them. They were just assuming that because we are Jews and we have the law of Moses and we ostensibly do these works of the law of Moses, well, then God's going to look down upon us on judgment day and say, "Oh, well, then that makes you my special people." And what that really means, bottom line, is that they were treating this whole concept of the righteousness that the law talked about as something that was dependent upon them and how righteous they were. And, of course, that's the real problem, is that God recognized is that they were sinners, and they were sinners just like the Gentiles were. And that's why he sent his Messiah into the world, to die as that sacrifice, to make atonement for sin. And that's what Paul's been talking about through the entire book. But when the Messiah came and the Messiah died for them, they said, "We don't like that kind of Messiah." And so they stumbled over the stumbling stone. And so that's the reason why Paul says in the beginning of chapter 10, verse 2, that they have a desire, they have a zeal for God, but it's a zeal not in accordance with knowledge. And that's the tragic irony in all of this. Comments about any of this before I kind of move on. I want to make another point or two on this, but before we move on to that, comments or questions about what I've said up to this point. All right. Now, one thing that I want to note here, this point that Paul makes here in verse 31, but Israel pursuing a law of righteousness did not arrive at that law. Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as though it were by works. Folks, what Paul's really trying to get at here is exactly the same point that he has been making throughout the book, and especially back in chapter 3 where he was explaining the proper place of the law in God's scheme of things. And this was the real problem with the Jewish thinking, is they were not realizing the proper place of the law, and as a result of that, they were making this mistake. They were pursuing a law of righteousness, he says in verse 31 of chapter 9, but they were pursuing that righteousness not by faith, but as though it were by works, as though it were this law of works, where at the end of the day, God could look down upon them and look at these good works of the law of Moses that these Jewish people of mine have done. That's what makes them special. That's why I'm going to save them. I'll judge the Gentiles, though. Remember back in chapter 3 where Paul had pointed out, no, the Messiah had to come and die. That's just a fact that when God sent his Messiah into the world, he died on the cross. Only one reason for the Messiah to have to die on the cross. He had to die because he had to be a sacrifice for sin and be resurrected to atone for sin. And so that ought to change your concept about what the purpose of the law of Moses is, what its purpose was in God's plan. So remember how Paul had said this back in chapter 3 and verse 27? Where then is boasting? This is after he's made the point about Jesus coming and being that sacrifice for sin. So if it depends upon Jesus and what Jesus has done, well then where is boasting? Paul said, it is excluded. By what kind of law? A law of works? No, but by a law of faith. For we maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from works of the law. In other words, Was the law of Moses given by God to the Jewish nation? Because here would be these works that God knew that they could do and they could accomplish their salvation on their own. Is that why God gave the law of Moses? No. But he did give the law of Moses to testify about the righteousness that God would give through his Son, the Messiah who would come. Remember that back in chapter 3 where he talked about how the law and the prophets bear witness to what Jesus did? Now what Jesus did as a sacrifice, Paul had said in chapter 3, was apart from the law of Moses. But the law of Moses bore witness to it. So the law of Moses was designed by God not to be the means of justification of Israel or anybody else. But the law of Moses was designed by God to testify about the righteousness that would come through Jesus Christ, and therefore it was designed by God to be a law of faith, to elicit faith on their part, to motivate them to trust in God and to put their faith in God, not to be a law wherein they could pridefully and boastfully point to that and say, oh, look at all the good works I have done. So that's why God's going to justify me. Does everyone see the difference in those two ways of understanding the purpose of the law of Moses? That's the key. Is the law of Moses, Paul, or I should say it like this, Paul's saying this to the Jewish people, is the law of Moses that God gave to us, is it designed by God to be a law of works where we in effect save ourselves, or was it designed to be a law of faith to point us to the righteousness that God would bestow upon us through his Son, Jesus Christ? Which is it? Law of works that you can boast in, or law of faith where you boast in God, not yourself? That's the point that he's making here in chapter 9. Same point he made back in chapter 3. Verse 31 of chapter 9, but Israel pursuing a law of righteousness. See, it was a law of righteousness. I mean, the law of Moses talked about righteousness. It promised righteousness. But how was it going to be accomplished? Not by the Jew doing the works of the law of Moses, and that's how the righteousness was then credited to him. But the law of righteousness, the law of Moses, was a law of righteousness by pointing to the righteousness God would bestow through his Son, Jesus Christ. And they didn't get that. And when Jesus came and explained it to them, they didn't want to accept it. And as a result of that, he says in verse 32, they did not pursue it by faith, but as though it were by works. And that's the problem. And that's why he says in chapter 10, verse 2, I have unceasing grief in my heart for my countrymen, but they have a zeal for God, but it's not in accordance with knowledge. And yes, most Jews are going to be lost because this is their thinking, and they won't remove this thinking from their minds. And this is what Paul's pointing out. John?
Listening to you explain all of this, it just makes me think about the law and how they could have come to this false conclusion. But when you look at it from their perspective, the law was so specific and so detailed and so intricate. And to go through the rituals of the law, it just almost seemed like it could consume one's mind to figure out how to do it right and to make sure you always did it. And I think that can maybe be something that we often can do today, too.
Yeah.
Is that we become consumed in trying to get everything right instead of realizing we need more so to be focused on God and allowing Him to lead us. And even though we do need to fulfill what God's told us, that keeping it perfect is not going to be where our focus is going to be. Should be.
Right.
It should be in the recognition that we're going to fail, and as hard as we try, we need to throw ourselves down on the mercy seat of God and beg Him to forgive us.
I think that's a great, great point, John.
I see the Jews and how they can do that, because I do it the same, and I don't have nearly as complex a system to work in. And just the few laws that I do have as far as the governing law, it's so easy.
Well, I think you're just exactly right in this. And just stop and think about this, folks. I mean, here God gives the Jews this law with all these works that necessarily would distinguish them from the other nations. Remember when we had our Old Testament survey of the Old Testament books? And we noted this point about the law of Moses. It was designed as a system of laws that purposely would distinguish the Jews who are now practicing this new culture that the law created for them from the Gentile culture, from the Gentile way of life. And so if you're now focusing in upon this law and here are all these commandments that God gives to us, and that distinguishes us from all those people out there, and you realize those people don't even know God, much less serve Him, well, we're serving Him. It's very easy for you then to begin to fall into the trap of thinking, well, you know what makes me really different from that person is because I'm better than that person. And it's real easy for you to begin to ignore or at least minimize the occasions when you don't fulfill God's law that He gave to you like you should. Because after all, you're pursuing it real hard. And you talk about the rigorous nature of the law and here, all these laws that they were called upon to pursue. And most Jews were rigorously pursuing that. I think that's why Paul uses this language. They were pursuing righteousness. But in pursuing righteousness, folks, the trap you can fall into is thinking about all these good things that you're doing, and then you begin to minimize those times when you haven't done what you know is right. And especially when you then compare yourself with somebody over there who's not even trying to pursue righteousness. Well, I sure look a lot better than him, you know. Well, from your perspective, yeah, but isn't that kind of the problem? Is that so often we tend to not give due attention to our own faults, and we tend to make ourselves look better? You know, it's kind of like when it isn't until you have somebody show you a picture of yourself, like a photograph of yourself, that you realize, do I really look like that? Am I that gray? Am I got that many wrinkles? Have I lost that much hair? Am I that ugly? You know, I mean, you just have more of an idealized picture of yourself in your mind. And I think that's exactly what Paul's saying that the Jews were doing, is they were pursuing this righteousness that the law talked about, but they fell into that trap of thinking how righteous they were and how great their acts of obedience were. But like Paul had talked about back in chapter 2 and chapter 3, they just overlooked all the times where they committed the same sins as the Gentiles did. And the fact that you, well, okay, maybe don't lie as often as the Gentiles do, but you still lie. Well, I mean, does that really make you better than that Gentile? You're still guilty of violating that commandment, you know. Or you've done all these other things that the Gentiles do. How are you really less a lawbreaker than the Gentiles? I mean, that's the point Paul's been making from the very beginning of Romans. And so, again, his point is that the righteousness of which the law spoke was never intended by God to be a righteousness wherein they, by their own efforts, obtained righteousness for themselves, by their own works. It was always intended to be a law that pointed them in the direction of God's righteousness through His Son, the Messiah, whom He would send. Okay? So this is what Paul's then talking about in chapter 10. And let me just note verse 1. Is Paul, does he not really care much about his Jewish people and the fact that they're going to be lost? What's the impression that you get from reading verse 1? I mean, and this is what he talked about back in the beginning of chapter 9. He's been accused by his countrymen of having no concern. In fact, where has Paul been spending his efforts in preaching the gospel? In what parts of the world? Gentile regions. And as we get into chapter 10, this is the issue Paul's going to be addressing more pointedly, is that he's been accused of not having any concern for his Jewish brethren and just being concerned about Gentiles out here. And this is kind of what he's having to explain. And he says here in verse 1, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them is for their salvation, his Jewish kinsmen. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. Now let me just make a parenthetical comment. This is not exactly the issue that Paul's talking about here, but I do think what he says here ties in with this issue that I want to say. Folks, there are so many people in this world that have a zeal for God, but it's not in accordance with knowledge. There are so many people in the denominational world, and when I say that, I'm not trying to exclude us from that. We can have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. I'm saying it's so easy for people to be religious-minded people and yet not be in accordance with knowledge. Paul is not suggesting that the Jewish people were, you know, a bunch of people who were praying to God in the synagogue, but on Friday night they're going to the local bars and just living it up. And that is not the kind of Jewish mindset that was the norm at all. And Paul's not talking about that. They were religious people. They were godly-minded people. But you can be very godly-minded and yet not have a zeal in accordance with knowledge. And that's the problem that the Jews had. And then when Jesus was trying to correct their lack of knowledge, that's when they balked at that and they were wanting to stay with what they traditionally had thought and they didn't want to be corrected on that. And that's a problem that all of us can have. I really am bothered sometimes when I hear people, I even hear people who should know better. They claim to be New Testament Christians, and yet they will talk about, well, you know, I'm listening to so-and-so, this televangelist on TV, and he quotes a lot of Scripture. And I can just tell he's a very zealous, godly-minded person. Well, does that make a person right? Very often a person can have a zeal for God, but not understand. Okay? So, I mean, bottom line, the only way we can know that we have a zeal, but a zeal that's in accordance with knowledge, is to go back and let Jesus be the standard. And that's what Paul's talking about here. And the Jews were unwilling to do that, by and large. Okay? Comments about that? Okay. All right. Now, look at verse 4 here. He says, for Christ is the end of the law. That's the way a lot of versions render it. The Greek word is the Greek word telos. And that word telos, you could translate it as some versions do, end or termination. Christ is the termination of the law. And that certainly makes some sense because we do know that the law was this old covenant and was superseded by the new covenant. But I really don't think that's exactly the point Paul's getting at here. The other meaning for this Greek word telos is the word goal or aim. It's kind of like when you're running a race, it's that finish line. It isn't just that the finish line is the end of the race, you know. I mean, you could quit running and disqualify yourself and you're at the end of your race. But the point is, that's the goal. You know, that's what you're trying to attain. Scotty Hamilton played high school football and was a place kicker. Okay. There's the goal post. He's trying to get that ball through the goal post. His teammates are trying to get that ball over the touchdown line, the end zone. That's the goal. That's where everything's headed. Everything's pointed. That's the culmination of everything. And I really think in context, that's the idea that Paul means here. When he says Christ is the end of the law for all who believe, he isn't making the point about the law of Moses being superseded by Christ. I mean, yeah, that certainly follows. I'm not denying that. But the real point that he's getting at here is that Christ is the goal. He's the aim. He's what the law was ultimately pointing toward. It's the same point that we were just making. The law was intended to be a law of faith pointing them toward the righteousness that would come through Jesus Christ and what Christ accomplished. And so that's in context what Paul's talking about. Christ is the goal of the law. He's the aim of the law. And so the righteousness that the law was promising was a righteousness that would be accomplished by Jesus Christ and what he would do. And that's what the law was pointing toward. That was the aim of the law, the goal of the law. And, yeah. Well, the word, I would say maybe the culmination, you know, the conclusion, you know, that word to me sounds like just end or termination. And I'm not saying that's not involved in it, but it's the point. This is the goal that you're trying to achieve. This is what you're heading for. Now, once you've got there, well, okay, well, you don't go back and redo all the other things. You've already achieved that goal. So you've ended your pursuit, but yet the point is this is the goal now that everything has been pointing toward. So that's the culmination of it. That's the aim of it all. And so he says that's Christ. Christ was the goal that the law was pointing you toward. And the righteousness that the law talked about was a righteousness that always was intended by God to be fulfilled, to be accomplished through what Jesus did on the cross, not by a Jew living as a Jew and doing the works of the law of Moses. Okay? That's what he's been saying throughout the book of Romans. Right?
The same thing is said about the old law in that it was a tutor to lead us to Christ. That's the aim.
Exactly. Yeah. Galatians 3, Paul uses a different metaphor, but it's the same ultimate point. Yeah. All right. Now, look at verse 5. He says, for Moses writes that the man who practices the righteousness which is based on law shall live by that righteousness. But that really is an allusion to Leviticus chapter 18, verse 5. It's the same passage Paul quotes in Galatians 3. It's basically just a very basic point that the law of Moses made, is that all these laws that God gave them, he intended for them to live by doing them. And not he didn't just mean live their life obeying him, but by obeying them, they would live. Okay, but the point Paul's making here is, okay, but did God intend that to mean that they would live and therefore be righteous in God's eyes because of how well they had done these laws? Or was Christ the goal of that law? Was their ultimate righteousness that the law talked about to be accomplished by what Jesus Christ did? And of course, what Paul's getting at is that it's the latter. Now, verses 5 and following are considered by most people to be some of the most difficult verses in Romans. And they can be tough, but they're tough because Paul's alluding to an Old Testament passage. And we're going to look at that Old Testament passage, and this is all going to make sense to you. Okay? You have confidence in that? Look at this. Paul, what throws people here is they're not familiar with the passage to begin with, and Paul's assuming that his audience is familiar with it. Okay? All right, here's the passage that Paul goes back to. And again, in the context, the point he's getting at is how should we view the law of Moses and its purpose? Was the law of Moses talking about righteousness coming by the efforts of the Jews who were obeying its commandments, or would righteousness come by what God accomplished? Deuteronomy 30. Now, before we start looking at this, remember our Old Testament survey class? Remember when we overviewed the book of Deuteronomy? Okay, this is where all that comes in handy. All these places where Paul cites Old Testament verses, okay? If you'll just go back in your mind to our study of these Old Testament books and kind of get the overview of this book of Deuteronomy in your mind, then this will kind of help you with this excerpt that Paul is referring to here. Book of Deuteronomy, what's it about? You know, you're just shy and don't want to interrupt somebody else who might be wanting to answer that question. All right, so it's this second generation of Israelites who are now about ready to cross the Jordan River and enter the Promised Land. Okay? And the book of Deuteronomy is a collection of three major speeches by whom? Moses. Moses is not going to go with them, but it's his farewell address. Remember that? Okay. And so he gives these three speeches to this second generation of Israelites as they enter into the Promised Land. And in those three speeches, he was recounting what for them? Jeremy, did you raise your hand? What was he reviewing for them? Their history, first of all, and then the laws. That's why Deuteronomy, it means like second law. It's a restatement of the law of Moses. Okay? So he was recounting their history. He was recounting all these laws. And now you get to the end of Deuteronomy. And so this is sort of his summation of all this. Remember in chapter 28... actually, starting with chapter 27, that's when he gave the blessings and the curses, how they'd be blessed if they kept these laws, they'd be cursed if they didn't keep the laws. Okay. All right, now in chapter 30, it's toward the end here of this, Moses, or almost at the end of his final speech, and he says, "For this commandment, which I command you today, is not too difficult for you, nor is it out of reach. It is not in heaven that you should say, who will go up to heaven for us, to get it for us, and make us hear it, that we may observe it? Nor is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will cross over the sea for us, to get it for us, and make us hear it, that we may observe it? But the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may observe it. Now, before you read Paul's quotation of this and his application of it in terms of Jesus, just think about what this means in context, in the original context. What was Moses saying here? It's not in heaven that you should say, he will go up to heaven for us to get it for us and make us hear it. What did he mean by that?
It's not as hard as you think.
Okay, is the life and the blessings that I've been talking about, that the law here has been promising you, is it something that is so difficult that it really is beyond the reach of you and anybody here in Israel, where the only way you could possibly obtain the life that it's talking about is for somebody to go up to heaven to be able to get it for us so we can, and bring it down to us or something so we can hear it. If it did take that, could any of the Israelites accomplish that? I mean, if you have to go up to heaven in order to somehow be able to understand God's law and observe it and all that, well then, that's going to be pretty much out of your reach, isn't it? Nor is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will cross the sea for us, to get it for us, to make us hear it, that we may observe it. Keep in mind that the Israelites, you know, they're a landlubber people. You know, they're not a seafaring people. And so, especially the ancient world, and it's still that way for me as far as I'm a landlubber. I'm just out there in the deep blue sea, scares me to death. But you know, because you drown out there, you know. But it isn't like that in order to receive the benefit of the law, you have to cross the ocean. You got to make some major effort out there into that abyss out there of the ocean, and that's the only way that you're ever going to be able to then receive what the law is talking about. Well, if that is what it took, then the Israelites are out of luck, right? Some of the renditions of this verse right here don't use the word sea, but they use the word abyss. It's sort of the difference of whether you're talking about the sea, the surface of the sea, or the real problem with the sea is not the surface. The real problem is you tend to sink down below the surface. That's what makes it dangerous, right? You know, if you always floated, it wouldn't be a problem, you know. But the problem is you tend to sink down deep into the sea, and that's the abyss. And you get out there in the wide ocean, and it's just real deep. It's just, you know, who knows how deep it is down there. That's the abyss. Well, some renditions of this use the word abyss. And that is the rendition that Paul cites. So I'm in Romans 10, so I just want to make that point to you. We'll come back to that. But the point of this is that no, God was not expecting the Israelites to be able to do something beyond their capacity in order for them to receive the blessings of which the law spoke. What did he expect them to do? He expected them to have the word, have his word in their mouth and in their heart that they might observe it. That's really another way of saying what? How does, in fact, Paul even summarize that in one word? If you have God's word in your mouth and in your heart, you are being a person of faith. That's what God was expecting. He wasn't expecting the Israelites to be able to do something beyond what they could do. He was going to take care of it. But he did expect them to have his word, which was very near to them. It was within their reach to have it in their mouth and their heart that they might observe it. To be a person of faith. All right, now, that's what that passage was talking about in the Old Testament context. Now, we got 4 minutes here. Here's how Paul takes that passage and applies it to the context of now, the end time, Jesus. Remember, he's the goal of the law. He's the means that God provided for obtaining righteousness. Okay, Paul quotes this passage and he applies it to Jesus in a very neat way. Look at what he does. But the righteousness based on faith speaks as follows. Deuteronomy 30, which he now quotes. Do not say in your heart, who will ascend into heaven? And then Paul interpolates this little phrase, this explanatory phrase. That is to bring Christ down. Or who will descend into the abyss of the sea? That is to bring Christ up from the dead. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth, and in your heart. And then Paul adds this explanatory phrase. That is the word of faith which we are preaching. All right, now, what's he doing here? He's taking this passage from Deuteronomy 30, and he's just made the point that the law of righteousness had Christ as its goal. It was really pointing to the righteousness that Christ would bring about. Okay, well, who will ascend into heaven? Well, I tell you what, let me say it like this. Paul's point is that the way for righteousness to be accomplished was not through what the Israelites would do, but through what God would do through His Messiah, whom He would send from heaven. And He would go down into the abyss of the grave, the abyss of death, and be resurrected. And that's what would accomplish this righteousness. And so who was going to bring that about through Jesus Christ? The Israelites or God? God was going to take care of that. So if we have to have Christ come down from heaven in order to save us, which we do, okay, is that something God expected the Israelites to accomplish? They have to ascend, to have somebody ascend into heaven to bring Christ down and to save us? No. Who brought Christ down so we could be saved? God took care of that one. He didn't expect us as human beings to accomplish that. He took care of that. All right? If, in order for righteousness to be accomplished, Jesus had to die and go into the abyss of death, and remember Sheol, the other name for Sheol is abyss. Because whether you're, if you're on land, the realm of the dead is Sheol. If you're out in the ocean, the realm of the dead is the abyss. Okay? So, if Christ had to rise from the abyss of death in order to provide salvation for us, okay, who had to raise Christ from the dead? Is that something that we as human beings have to accomplish? We have to go down into the abyss of death and bring Him up? We can't do that. If it did take us to do that, we couldn't do it. We're out of luck. No, God did that. So it's not like we have to say, who will descend into the abyss? That is to bring Christ up from the dead. We don't have to worry about that. God's accomplishing that. He has accomplished that. But what do we have to do? Well, this passage spells it out. We have to have God's word near us, in our mouth, and in our heart. And Paul says that is, in other words, for us now in the last days that the gospel of Christ has come, that word that should be in our mouth and our heart is this word of faith in Jesus Christ that we are preaching. In other words, folks, he's saying that the righteousness of God's promise never depended upon our efforts as human beings. If it did, we'd be out of luck. It depended upon what God was going to do. He wants us to just put our faith in Him. And we can do that. Does that make sense? Okay, that's what that passage is talking about. Okay? All right, see if that doesn't help. All right, thank you, folks.